Welcome back to Wicked Wives. I'm your host, Alyssa. I am alone again today. Tasha, I don't think, is going to be coming back anytime soon, if not at all. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'll keep you updated on that. But how has everyone been for the past, like, I think 2 weeks? I haven't posted. I'm sorry. It has been a very crazy 2 weeks. We ended up going to Ohio, and oh my gosh, I went to go see a Fleetwood Mac Gold concert. Oh my god, if you ever get a chance to go and see Fleetwood Mac Gold, please do. They sounded just like Stevie Nicks. It sounded so amazing. And yeah, it was a great experience overall. I would definitely recommend it. We even stayed at like this 5-star hotel. The food wasn't that great at the hotel, but like that bed, oh my god. As soon as my head hit the pillow, I was out. I slept for like 10 hours because I didn't have kids with me. It was heaven. But yeah. How was your guys' week? I would love to hear about it. I got a new kitty. Her name is Mila. She hasn't came out of hiding since we brought her home yesterday, but, you know, in due time, she'll warm up. Yeah. I said a blessing over her to maybe, hopefully, make her feel a little more at home and welcome, so I'm kind of hoping that works. So yeah. I ended up recording this last night. I am going to let you know right now, you guys are going to get two parts immediately, because I kind of feel bad for not really keeping up on episodes. I kind of feel really terrible about that. I've been trying really hard to be consistent, but with my daily life and everything, it's just crazy. And by the end of the night, like, I'm so exhausted, you know, and I'm trying to work on it, So, this is kind of my apology for saying, sorry, I've been a piece of garbage host. Here is part one and two, and to even make it even better, I already have Friday's episode lined up. I just gotta research it and record it, and I think I'm gonna be recording it Thursday. So, I hope you guys accept my apology, and thank you guys so much for everyone who has stuck by. One podcast in particular has, like, always been there. They're so amazing. You should go check out Blood is Thicker Than Water. Freaking amazing. Look them up on Twitter. They're so great. Thank you guys so much. And I guess we're just gonna hop right into it. I just want to go on record saying last night, I haven't talked to you guys in so long, so I was like really excited to talk to you guys. The intro lasted like 10 minutes. I was talking for 10 minutes because I missed you guys so much and wanted to, like, tell you about my last 2 weeks because it's been so crazy and awesome at the same time. So, like, when I had to re-record today because there was an audio issue, I was like, let's not talk for 10 minutes. Got it. Awesome idea. So, that was a lot better. Anyways. Alright, so let's jump into the case. This one is going to be a doozy. Like I said on Twitter, I am warning you, it is involving a child. She was 8 years old at the time. I've never heard about this, even though apparently it was really popular. The only reason I heard about it was there's a woman on TikTok called Selena Spooky Boo. If you don't follow her, you need to. She's so funny. She's so great. Also, if you don't have TikTok, you should definitely download it. It's addictive. I love it. I know. I millennial here, but anyway, yeah, she actually posted a story time about this. Apparently, she t was talking to Michael, which is the guy, one of the monsters who did this. And she was talking to him on the internet, and she knew Tori. They were friends. She was around when this happened. And then when it happened and she saw who it was, she was like rocked. I mean, her and Woodstock, which is where it happened at, was completely rocked. They were like, they can't believe this happened. So yeah, you should go check out that story time because it's really great. And she's kind of warning everyone to be a little cautious when you're talking to people online because she had no idea. And that's a great message to give. She's amazing. Also, most of this information, I'm always going to post my sources at the bottom of the anchor page, always, always, always. But if you want to watch the documentary that I took most of my information from, go look up Crime Beat on YouTube. They're pretty much mini documentaries on cases, and that's where I got my information. It is amazing. It's pretty much a long documentary. The one that we're gonna talk about is Tori Stafford, and there's two parts. Both of them are about 45 minutes long, give or take a few extra minutes. And I encourage you to go and watch it because there's a couple things that I left out that I felt like weren't really too important. But yeah, you should definitely go check them out. They have so many cases, and honestly, I might go to them for a lot of my information from now on because they are very informative. And so, yeah, I highly recommend them. I keep saying I'm not gonna drag on and talk, but I am. It's like 7 minutes. Okay, so. Also, if you hear like noises in the background a little bit, my husband's upstairs trying to get the baby to sleep, so I apologize. So, yeah. My bad. Anyway, today we're gonna be talking about Tori Stafford and the two monsters who did this to you. Now, like I said, this is going to be two parts. The first part, we are probably going to be talking about Tori and the two people who done this, and then like maybe brush upon what happened to Tori. But most of the case and the murder is going to be in part two. So with that being said, let's hop into this. Now we're going to talk about Victoria Elizabeth Marie Stafford, or Tori, and she was born July 15th, 2000, to Tara McDonald and Rodney Stafford. Now everyone said growing up she was the most precious little girl you would ever see. You know, she lit up the room wherever she went, and she kind of brought a smile to everyone's face, you know. And if you look at her picture on my Twitter, she is beautiful inside and out. So it makes it even more of a tragedy, honestly. She was a tomboy who loved being dirty and playing in the mud, which, girl, same. But she also loved brat dolls and dressing up for church every single Sunday when her grandma would pick her up. Tara, her mother, said that, you know, every single Sunday she would be ready. She would be up, she would be showered, dressed, ready to go. And she made a comment like, "I wish she would be like that every day for school." So, yeah, she was ready. And then her mom, said, you know, she was an absolute firecracker when she wanted to, but she loved animals. She absolutely adored animals. And she told a story about how she had a little puppy that when she came home from school, the puppy would run up to her and kind of like they would hold each other's hands, paws, whatever. And she would look up at her mom and be like, "Look, mom, he loves me. Isn't he adorable?" So, yeah, she was an animal lover through and through. Tara and Rodney actually ended up divorcing, and Tori lived with her mom and her brother Darren. So her dad would actually come and pick them up for like maybe weekends, you know, holidays. Me and my ex are divorced, so you know, that's kind of what happens is like he gets her for certain holidays and certain like summer. You know, and I think that's pretty much what they had too. And but Tori mostly resided with her mom and Darren. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the day Tori went missing. On April 8th, 2009, in Woodstock, Ontario, Tori was planning on walking home with her brother to a new house that they just moved into a week ago. She was actually really excited to get home that day because she got to decorate her room the day before with like Brat dolls and Hannah Montana posters. So she was ready. She was ready to go home. Her brother said that he ended up riding his bike and took two other school children home and then turning around to go get his sister. But when he got there, he looked around and she was absolutely nowhere to be found. He thought it was weird for a second, but then he was like, "Well, it's not really that far. Maybe she just walked." So he turned around and went home. Except when he got home, he realized she didn't walk home and she was nowhere to be found. So he ended up having to tell his mom, of course. And, you know, Tara knew that the kids got home at 3:45 every single day on the dot. A lot of people that don't have kids might be like, that's a little helicopter, don't you think?" But no, not really. I mean, I'm the same way with my kids. You know, you like to know when they get home. So if anything like this were to happen, you know something's up, you know? It's just kind of like it makes parents feel a little better. Anyway, she thought maybe Tori might have stopped and talked to a friend or went to a neighbor to say hello. So she ended up, you know, trying to calm down and she waited till 4 o'clock. And when she didn't come home, she was like, "Okay, I need to start calling people." So she started calling friends and relatives saying, you know, "Tori didn't come home. Is she with you?" And none of them knew anything about where she was. So they ended up driving around, maybe looking around the blocks, you know, seeing if anything was out of the ordinary, but nothing really looked off. So 6 o'clock rolled around, and she decided that something was very wrong and needed to call the police and reported Tori missing. Then around 6:25, she called Rodney to tell him, "Hey, Tori didn't make it home, and I'm really worried." Apparently, Rodney was going to be picking the kids up, but he was running late due to work. So they spend hours looking around the town for Tori with absolutely no luck. There was no sign of anything. So Tara said that she couldn't sleep that night, obviously. And the next morning, when she woke up, they had printed out a stack of missing posters and placed them on the dining room table so they could kind of give it out to people and be like, "Hey, we need help. You need to look for this little girl." Tori said that, or not Tori, sorry, Tara said that she absolutely lost it, broke down. She could not believe that this was happening to her and her little girl. She couldn't believe that she was really missing and this was real. After that, they spent hours looking around for Tori again, but still came up with nothing. The police stopped at Ronald's house, or sorry, Rodney's house, and made sure she wasn't there hiding out, because they had to eliminate all the possibilities. And the police chief was Rod Freeman at the time. He's now retired, but at the time he was the, he was actually a sergeant, I do believe, because he didn't become police chief until after this. He was actually promoted because of this, which was awesome. Congrats. But Rod Freeman said that 99.9% of missing persons is solved immediately. But everyone felt like this one was different. There was a lot more urgency and a lot more, we need to find her now. So they knew something was very wrong immediately. The search was one of Ontario's largest searches in their history. And Woodstock was a very small and close community where everyone knew everything and everyone knew everyone's business. So when they found out that Tori was missing, all of the citizens of this town just came together and started searching. People were even wearing missing posters on their bodies and cars so people would see it throughout the day. To, like, if you see this girl, you know, here's the number. So, helicopters swarmed the town also, searching for any sign of maybe a little girl roaming around the woods or the fields that were around. And Rod Freeman said that they contacted Amber Alert to send out notifications. But at the time, Ontario, Amber Alert, you had to meet a certain criteria to get an alert out. You had to literally see someone being thrown in the car or have proof that they were in danger. If you didn't have any proof, then they will literally turn you down, which is exactly what happened. Which, yeah, I know. I was like, my blood was boiling when I read that. I was like, there is a little girl missing. Who cares if there's proof? However, something with that happens later on, so just sit tight. So Rod decided that they needed to reach out in other ways, any way they could. So they ended up doing social media, they ended up getting the news to do it, and then they even had America's Most Wanted covering the story. So it was pretty big, it was blowing up. Like I said, it was huge, and I've never heard of it, so it's crazy to me. But now we're here. Then they found a small clue that could help them solve the mystery as to what happened to Tori. The school caught footage of a blurry person wearing a white coat leading Tori away towards a parking lot on the side of the school. It was kind of secluded from everywhere else. The thing that scared everyone the most was how willing Tori was walking with her. Like, if you were to watch the surveillance footage, you can clearly see Tori, like, skipping and, like, kind of walking beside her excited, you know? And it was kind of a shock to the parents, especially. Like, it seemed that Tori knew these people. Whoever was taking her, it seemed like she knew them. And that's a terrifying thought, to think that someone was actually talking to your little girl every day, getting to know her, and then taking her. That's scary. So the search continues, and now they're trying to find this figure in the white coat that led her away. They also decided that now was the time we should probably treat this as a child abduction instead of a missing person. They should have done that in the first place, but oh well. They begged anyone to come forward if they saw this that day that she went missing, person in the white coat leading her away, or even if you just saw, you know, anything out of the ordinary that day, please step forward, you know? So, as her family and community searched for Tori, Tara couldn't really go out and help. And I don't mean that as, you know, she was busy, anything like that. I mean, she couldn't bring herself to go out and search for Tori. In the interview, she said that it wasn't because she didn't want to, it was just because she was terrified of what she would find if she did. So she was holding on to hope that she was at a friend's house or a relative and just didn't let them know where she was, you know? But as time went on, people started pointing fingers at each other, but particularly Tara. They were saying horrible things to her, by the way, like horrible. They were saying that she wanted Tori to be kidnapped. She is the one who actually organized the kidnapping, and these people were hired by her to take her daughter. There was even a accusation of she used to be addicted to pills, so they actually said that this is because of a drug debt that she might have. You know, they took Tori to pay off a debt. All of them were false, of course. But I mean, in a crime junkie standpoint, I see what they're saying. Because if my daughter went missing, I would flip shit. I would be out there every day searching. I would be knocking on doors. I would be burning down the fucking town to find my baby. Hell, like a couple months ago, I was late to picking her up for the first time at the bus stop, and we just moved here, and I was terrified because when I got there, she wasn't there. And like, this is a new neighborhood. I was terrified that she started walking. And she like got picked up. Nobody, I mean, I was terrified something happened to her. So I'm driving around frantic, trying to look down roads, only to find out that the school bus driver saw that I wasn't there and took her back to the school. So I was like bawling my eyes out when I went to go pick her up again. So like, I get it. I get from a crime junkie standpoint, why isn't she looking for it? However, on the other standpoint, you don't know how someone's going to grieve or take this, you know? So maybe this was her way of coping, which she's a mom, she's worried about her daughter. I would be terrified of what I found as well. Everyone's different. But the big thing was, Tara says that the police would tell her she was the number one prime suspect. And Rod actually denies this. But Tara goes to say that the police would interrogate her, including showing her a bag of hair that looks exactly like Tori's. They even went as far as testing her by setting up a ransom and a phone number to call. And they would watch her to see that, to see if she would call the people that she quote unquote hired and tell them about the ransom and give them the number to call. That's how far they went. And you have Tara sitting here like horrified, you know? Like, there is someone out there with my kid and you're wasting all your time on me. She keeps crying, saying, "I don't know how to prove to you that I had nothing to do with this, but could you please go and find my baby instead of looking at me?" She took polygraph tests. She sat through hours of interrogation, and she's still number one on their list. How is she supposed to prove it to them? She had no idea. Now, on April 12th, a few public tips, not just one or two, like a lot of them, came in saying that the woman in white was a girl named Terry Lynn McClintic. They ended up taking her in and keeping her because of an outstanding warrant she had for a parole violation. When she was questioned, she denied everything, of course, like they do. But she did admit that Tara and her have met a couple times through her mother, because Tara would buy Percocet pills from her mom. Now, while Terry was being held, her boyfriend, Michael Rafferty, came to visit her to have a private chat. later we'll actually figure out that they were talking about Tori, of course. Okay, so pause, because now that we have just been introduced to Terry and Michael, we're gonna pause and talk about the two Bonnie and Clyde wannabes, because oh boy, there is so much to unpack here. Like, seriously, every single time I thought that I was done recording this, I would just go down a rabbit hole and find more and more and more. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is gonna be a long ass case. So, we're gonna talk about Michael and Harry real quick. First, we're gonna start with Michael because I didn't really find anything about his past that much. But on Terry, there is a slew of shit. Okay, a slew of shit. So, a relative actually was interviewed on Crime Beat that said that Michael was always a manipulative person. He would sweet talk anyone to do his bidding. He also liked choking during sex, which later a few girlfriends, ex-girlfriends, would take the stand and admit this, and even add that some of it wasn't consensual at all, and they would choke them until they passed out. Which, listen, BDSM is widely known and widely followed, but always, 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 always get consent. If they tell you no, take it, leave it, fuck off. Seriously. Please. Later on in the trial, they're gonna bring up what they found in his computer browser. Now I'm going to give you a little warning because these are actually really horrible. It's not a long list, but it is really terrible. So, the list was torture sex fantasies, snuff porn and child porn, someone looked up children for sale, and then finally babies for sale, which anyway. Another ex would also go on stand saying that he convinced her to become an escort, and then he would use her money that she made for things that he wanted. I guess he had a very luxurious lifestyle, and he literally manipulated anyone and everyone he could to pay for that lifestyle. You're actually going to see that come up in his future again. And he's a fucking terrible person. That's all I gotta say on that. They also found a MySpace ad for Asian women looking to come to Canada for a green card. He said that they had to be serious about moving to Ontario and they needed to marry him, but for a price. He didn't name the price. He probably told them like DMs, but he apparently got a shit ton of answers, but it didn't work out, apparently. Okay, so that was Michael. Now we're gonna look at the shit show as Terry. Also known as Terry. Like, seriously, it's fucked up. Okay, and you can feel bad for the little tiny kid Terry if you want to, but honestly, you're not even gonna feel bad for the little tiny. I just listen. So Terry was born in 1990 to a stripper. Her mom actually didn't want her and gave her to a stripper friend named Carol McClintic, who became her new adopted mother. Sorry if you heard that. My nose itched like so bad and I had to like itch it while I was talking. My allergies, man, are just terrible. Absolutely terrible. The other day, my husband went out and there was pollen literally covering all of the cars. And I was like, Jesus, no wonder why my sinuses are punching me in the face. So, my sinuses are crazy. I'm sorry. I'm gonna try not to, like, itch my nose, but I'm no promises. Anyway, so Carol McClintic became her new adopted mom. Carol's son would later say that Carol was absolutely a horrible role model for a child. Didn't understand how it was a great idea at the time, because it really wasn't. They ended up moving around Ontario a lot, so she would go to different schools, and her attendance wasn't really that great, obviously. But one thing was for sure was that she would be bullied frequently because she was a stripper's daughter. Now, about the age of 4 or 5, Carol found out that Terry was being molested and put an end to it immediately. However, the damage was already done. At age 8, Terry started to do drugs, starting with weed and then slowly progressing to worse things. I'm gonna be real with y'all. I found a little bit of evidence about her when she was 8 years old, but I decided to leave it out because it's fucked up. Okay. I guess I'm gonna tell, I'll tell you, but please trigger that it involves an animal. She pretty much put a puppy in the microwave and turned it on until it was screaming. Thankfully, someone grabbed it out in time, but he eventually needed to be put down. So, yeah. I wasn't gonna say it all, but I mean, you do need to know everything. So, there it is. I just unpacked that for you. Okay, so she ended up in 2 foster homes as a kid, then a detention home as a teen. After around 12 to 16 years of age, she would go in and out of juvie due to misdemeanors of assault and fighting. However, even in jail, she was an absolute shit show. Okay, she would fight inmates, and she would write letters to people who, quote-unquote, wronged her. So also, she had a diary about... She had a diary, okay? And she's 12 to 17, remember that. And instead of writing, you know, like, oh, I think Joey is the cutest boy in the world, like normal 12 to 17-year-olds, no. She ended up writing about how she wanted to torture and slaughter someone, ripping out their bones one by one. And this twisted bitch was so fucked up that she would sign these letters and diary entries as murderous bitches, which is what she loved to call her and her friends. So, it's not just her who's a little crazy. Apparently, she has friends that are as well. God help us all. Okay, when she had time to get out of juvie, she went right back in because her and her mom ended up getting in an argument, and she beat her so bad that her mom almost went blind in one eye. Which is weird because later in life, apparently, they were like best friends and they got along. So, I don't know. So in 2008, they moved to Woodstock, where she had absolutely no friends. But hey, she got to meet every single drug dealer in town, so guess that's a plus. I'm being sarcastic. Please do not meet drug dealers, okay? Drugs are bad, kids. Please don't. This is also when she met Michael at a pizza outlet while they both waited for their food. Now, Michael, you know, started chatting her up, being the smooth talker he is and all, and offered to take her home, where they sat in the driveway talking for hours, before finally deciding they wanted to go for a little drive. Guys, seriously, you know where this is heading. If you don't, then you're too young for this. Okay, they parked somewhere and took pills before they... Yep. Yeah, guessed it. Had sex. So original. We knew that was coming. Anyways, Terry was absolutely smitten, apparently. And she was quoted saying he knew what to say at exactly the right times. And it felt amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. So they were inseparable. They went to movies, they hung out all the time, and they became really, really close. Okay, so we all know they both did this, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about them. So I am going to hop back into the investigation at this point. They have Terry in custody, and after her talk with Michael, she's suddenly having a change of heart, and she decides to tell investigators exactly what happened. Now, I read somewhere that she ended up finding out that he was talking to another woman, and they think that she's just doing this to be spiteful and get back at him. But I don't know. We don't know. I just thought I'd add that. Now, Detective Jim Smith was the investigator in charge, and he actually sat with her and played the good cop while he was trying to get her to spill everything and tell him what happened. You know, he was saying, "I this must be so hard for you, and I know this must be a lot to hold in. Just let it out, and you're safe." Bunch of bullshit. But I get it. I get why he did that. And plus, he's a badass, so get it, Jim. He ended up getting her to confess, and she said her and Michael was hanging out one night, and he just asked her randomly, "Hey, would you ever kidnap and kill a child?" Like, I mean, Terry, that's a huge red flag, girl. Pick up, grab purse, get the fuck out of there. If my date ever said, "Hey, you want to kidnap a child?" I'll be like, "And I'm calling an Uber. I am out." But the murderous bitches that she is told him, "Yeah, absolutely." And he began to push it, saying, "I don't believe you. You'd never do that. If so, prove it. Let's do it today." So they started talking about who they would choose, and Michael apparently said they needed a young female because that would be a lot easier to manipulate them. So they went to the school, and Michael parked the car a block away while Terry walked up to the doors. She would take the first little girl she saw, and sadly, Tori was the first one to walk out that day. Now, I'm going to tell you what she said in the first interview because later, like a idiot, she changes her story on the stand. But we'll get back. We'll get to that. Just you hold your horses. I'm also going to give you a little trigger right now because the thing she says is absolutely horrible. It is gut-wrenching. Just buckle up. Deep breaths. Okay. So she was going to grab the very first girl that she saw. It was Tori. She walks up to Tori and she says, "Hey, I have a little Shih Tzu puppy in my car and was wondering if you wanted to see it." Of course, Tori agreed and walked away with her, which explains why she was so willing to walk with her on the camera. That explains how excited she was and bouncing up and down. Now, when they got to the car and they opened the door, she didn't see any puppy. She wasn't really excited anymore. However, Terry threw her in the car, got in the back seat with her, and they drove away to a Home Depot for some trash bags and a claw hammer. Terry was quoted saying that she thought about not even going back to the car because she knew what was about to happen, but she thought that she could make this horrible thing a little better for Tori, if she was there. Which, fuck you, bitch. just you could have, if you didn't, if this was true, which it's not, if this is true and you really did have feelings of, I don't want to go back to the car because I know something bad's gonna happen, get a security guard, get a bystander, get the police, okay? You had, we're gonna find out that they drove for about 2 hours. You had all that time to call the police, tell them where you are, and they made numerous stops, by the way, numerous stops, and tell them where you are and let this little girl live, okay? Shut the hell up about you knew what was gonna happen and you weren't ready for this. Shut the hell up. You could have saved her. You're a piece of garbage. Anyway, let's continue. Went on a little rant there. So she went back to the car and they drove off. They ended up going to the location where they found Tori, and they said that they took her to a bathroom where Terry told her, you know, you're such a strong girl, you can get through this, and walked back to the car with her hand in hand. Terry then proceeded to get in the front seat and held Tori's hand because Tori begged her not to leave, and held her hand while Michael started to sexually assault her. However, apparently Terry couldn't deal with it and went for a walk, leaving Tori and Michael in the car. She even added that she could hear Tori screaming for her to come back and not to leave her, but she had to go. And when she got back, Tori was gone and Michael was using water bottles to clean his body and genitals off. Now, they didn't say anything else, just threw her body in a trash bag and piled 4 or 5 rocks on top of her. Terry says it was all Michael and she did nothing. Absolutely nothing. Which, of course she did. While she was saying all this, I want to let you know that she was very upset. She was crying. She was boo-hoo, I'm the victim. But then as soon as Jim would like walk out of the room, the act dropped. She was stone-faced. She was looking around. She was checking her nails. Like, she did not give a shit. And then immediately, when Jim walked in the room, tears. It was like a switch. On, off, on, off. So, she knew how to act. Let's just say that. So, now their hope for returning Tori was shattered, of course. They know she's dead, and now they need to find the body. After telling her parents, of course. So, one group of police went to arrest Michael, and the other stayed behind to call Tori's family and have them come to the station because there was a quote breakthrough in the case. Rodney, Tori's father, said that when he heard this, he was so excited and super scared because he was gonna walk through those doors, and his hope was that Tori would be there, or they would at least know where she was hiding, or you know. But as soon as he walked in, he seen the whole entire family, and he knew something was off. So, when everyone got there and they sat down, the cops had to pretty much explain that they had Terry and Michael arrested, but they were being charged with murder. Now, Rodney was confused, obviously. He was saying, she's just missing. What do you mean, murder? And they had to explain to him, you know, like Terry confessed that they murdered her and hid her body. But he refused to believe that. He said that I will believe it when I see it, because right now I will hold on to any hope that she's just hiding anywhere. And these guys are just like lying and not, you know, telling the whole truth. So, Now, when Michael was being interrogated, he said that him and Terry was not dating and it wasn't serious at all. Of course. Jim Smith, the badass he is, was in charge of this interrogation, and let me tell you, the good cop routine has completely left the building because he came in there and he was ready. He threw a missing poster on Michael's lap saying, "This is the girl you murdered. See? Look at her face." And he even said, "You know, you're gonna tell me what you did to her and where she's at." And I at one point in this, I even like was like, "Yes, Jim, get it." Because Michael has a like security blanket on. And Jim is just nailing him and like insulting him. And one insult in particular had me laugh a little bit. And he said, "Why don't you put your security blanket down, put your big boy pants on, and fess up to what you did to this little girl and tell us where the hell she is?" And I'm just like, "Yes, Jim, get it." It was good. It was like a little tiny haha in this horrible situation. But so Jim is sitting there drilling him. He's telling him everything Terry said and just like, "You need to confess. You need to tell us because Terry spilled everything and we know what you did." But then Michael swears up and down that Terry is a big fat liar and Michael did not kill her. He swears he did not kill Tori. Had nothing to do with the murder part of it. Of course, nobody believed him. But we're gonna find out in part two how there is a lot more to this story than meets the eye.
I'm sorry what I did. Don't talk. Just welcome. I'm sorry what I did. I couldn't help it. Don't know why.